second case of the day, Rich Products versus Zurich American. Mr. Zarlock.
Can you please the court, counsel? Preston Zarlock for the appellant here. The question before this court is whether under the unique facts of this case, the appellant can maintain an action against Zurich under Wisconsin's direct action statute. Now, we submit that the language of the statutes are complied with and that the purpose is fulfilled by reversing the district court's dismissal of the direct action claim. I want to very briefly touch on only the few relevant facts in the history of this case. As this court is aware, I think, from the previous matter, this incident involved damage to Rich Products' food components at its Appleton, Wisconsin facility. Because of that, we had pled claims, you know, out of this factual situation based both on tort and contract. The district court dismissed the tort claims. It recognized that there was damage to the so-called other property within the meaning of the economic loss doctrine. It recognized that there was a serious public health hazard, and it recognized that dismissal of RPC's claims was a substantial expansion of the economic loss doctrine. Nonetheless, based upon the adoption of some rules which it admitted had not been used in Wisconsin before, such as the de minimis argument, saying that at the end of the day we only found a certain number of pieces of metal, and a foreseeability argument, saying that, well, yes, you had damaged other property, but it was foreseeable that might happen, it dismissed our tort claims. And this court, in a short opinion, you know, saying that this is the Wisconsin law and we're following that, affirmed that. The district court, in the same opinion, allowed us to sue Zurich, you know, bring a direct action against Zurich. Zurich opposed that on inconvenience grounds. They then answered, never raising any defense based, well, yes, they did raise the defense based upon the direct action statute, but only relating to two specific claims which aren't at issue here, not relating to the claims for dismissed. So that brings us to where we are now, is whether under these facts, RPC can maintain a claim under the direct action statute. There are two statutes involved, as the court's aware, the substantive part, which is 632.24, which basically requires that there be property damage, which there's no dispute that that part is complied with. The second statute is the procedural aspect of it, which is 803.04, which is where the whole dispute is embroiled, such that is this an action for damages caused by negligence, despite the absence, admittedly now, of an express cause of action for negligence. Now, admittedly, there's not a lot of case law on this point. There's really one case which kind of faces this on all, relatively on all fours, and that's the FDIC versus MGIC case, district court, with a fiduciary duty claim. Again, not a negligence claim, but the court in that case held, well, the statute requires damages caused by negligence. We feel this qualifies, so they allowed it, even though there wasn't an express negligence claim. I think under the circumstances of this case, we have to look to the intent of the statute. Now, in its brief initially, Zurich says, well, no, it's unambiguous. You know, you can't look to the intent. But then they also say that you have to look at the title of the statute, which is an admission that it's ambiguous, because under Wisconsin law, the title of the statute is in part, and it can only be looked to in the case of ambiguity. And the purpose of the statute is very clearly set forth. It's not like we need to ferret that out somewhere. It's set forth by the Wisconsin Supreme Court numerous times. And it is to save litigation and reduce the expense by determining the rights of all parties in a single action, which is usually defended by the insurance carrier, to expedite the final settlement of litigation and the final payment to the injured person if he be entitled to recovery, to place the burden upon the insurance carrier, who has been compensated in advance for its liability, to pay the damage assessed for such injuries to persons and damage to property. And I, under the facts of this case, clearly the purpose is violated by dismissing direct action. Now we're going to have a whole separate coverage action rather than determining it all in one. And now the collection is going to be delayed, all these things which the purpose of the statute is for. Now,
what's the remaining claim?
The remaining claims are for, all that remains are claims based on breach of implied warranties. Not express warranty, which I think is a distinction here, but it's the implied warranty claims under UCC 2314 and 2315.
Mr. Zarlock, all the tort claims are gone.
The express tort claims have been dismissed, Your Honor, correct.
Were there any express warranties at all when they bought this machine?
There were, we believe, but those have also been dismissed by the judge, relating to, for various other reasons, which aren't related to this.
Anything took price? Was there anything in that original?
No, no. As a matter of fact, as the court, this court recognized and as the court below recognized, we accepted their quotation with our purchase order. Their order acknowledgement, which had a bunch of terms they were trying to limit remedies and things, never came in. So there were no terms other than, hey, we're buying this for this. That's it. Okay. I would submit, you know, to the court here, clearly the economic loss doctrine postdates substantially the direct action statute. And without the application of the economic loss doctrine, we would have our tort claims still, and we would not be here before this court. And I think in looking at the intent of the legislature, that's important, because when this was put in, it did not anticipate such a cutoff, which the economic loss doctrine, you know, does, whether for good or bad reasons, and we would have these claims. Thus, it cannot, you know, honestly be said that the legislature anticipated a situation such as this and that we would not be able to maintain the direct action. And, you know, again, it's very, there's not a lot of case law on this issue, and I think the court is going to have to sort of strike a field here, whichever decision it makes. But I think because it isn't exactly clear on the wording, I think you have to look at the intent, and the intent clearly supports RPC's position. It's not a, you know, it's for damages caused by negligence, and that's what we've asked for. Now, our negligence claim is out, admittedly, but that's not the same thing. I would like to just address one final issue, and that's the waiver issue. I think it also reflects on the first point, because it shows that this issue wasn't exactly clear to defense counsel either. They didn't oppose it on that grounds when we moved to Adam, even though the claim had been dismissed. They didn't assert it in their answer, and they moved approximately a year and a half later. And as the court's holding below that this is not an affirmative defense, I think is wrong. As this court recognized in the Utz case, the limitations of the direct action statute are something which the defendant has a burden on. Now, admittedly, it's not mentioned in Federal Rule 8, but as this court has also recognized, the general rule is anything which the defendant has the burden on is an affirmative defense and should be pled. Finally, the fact that they pled it in the context of two other claims showed that they knew it was an affirmative defense, too. And while certainly the courts have a lot of discretion in relieving waiver, where there's no real excuse for not pleading it when they had plenty of basis to do so, generally waiver is not appropriate. So I'll just say that on that. But in conclusion, I would say that there's really no support in case law or the statute for an unnaturally rigid application of the statute. The purpose clearly supports the restoration of our direct action claim. And for those reasons, we would ask the court to reverse the district court's dismissal of our district.
Thank you, Mr. Harley.
Thank you.
Mr. Mullins?
May it please the court. Counsel. Tom Mullins on behalf of Zurich American Insurance Company. This court should affirm the district court's decision based on a clear and simple reading of the Wisconsin Direct Action Statute that there is no claim or action for negligence against Zurich American's insured Chemutech, and therefore there can be no direct action against Zurich. The in counsel's recitation of the backdrop of this case, there's one important addition that should be made. In paragraph 12 of the second amended complaint, Rich Products pled that Zurich was a proper party under the direct action statute and cited both statutes. That paragraph was denied. Additionally, Zurich raised as an affirmative defense the application of the direct action statute because Rich had gone beyond the court's order allowing it to name Zurich as a party and added intentional and negligent misrepresentation claims against Zurich, and those are first claims, not direct actions through the liability of Zurich's insured. Zurich, at the time they originally added to the case, the tort claims for misrepresentation, product liability, negligence, design, etc., were all alive, and therefore Zurich was an appropriate party under the direct action statute. Following this, the district court's dismissal of all of the tort claims, this court's affirmance of that decision The only claim that remained is the claim for breach of implied warranty. That is not a claim for negligence. The direct action statute under 632.24 provides that an action can be brought against an insurance carrier for if there is a bond or policy that covers negligent action. Under 803.42, the statute states that it has to be an action for damages caused by negligence. It can't be said any simpler than a breach of implied warranty claim is not a negligence claim. The negligence and tort claims were ruled by this court to be out of the case. This court determined that there was not damage to other property, but that there only was economic loss. And economic loss is something that can be allocated for and identified by the parties to a commercial transaction. As a result, only the implied warranty claim that remains doesn't partake of a negligence action. There is no court or legally imposed obligation on the defendant Chemutech, which could constitute a breach and cause damages. There is only the commercial relationship between the two parties and their implied warranty. And since that's all that exists, there clearly isn't a negligence action, and by the very words of the statute, a direct action is completely inappropriate. The additional issue regarding the purpose behind the statute, I can address very simply. Yes, counsel is correct that the purpose behind the direct action statute, as we can discern from the Wisconsin cases talking about it, is to facilitate collections on behalf of injured people when that action is based on negligence. Since this action isn't based on negligence, that purpose doesn't come into play, nor is it thwarted. The economic loss doctrine is defined the contours of recoverability in commercial situations, again, not implicating duties and obligations in law which form the basis for negligence, therefore not implicating the purpose behind the statute to facilitate collection on behalf of injured people when they have damage to property. Finally, the waiver issue, the backdrop, as I said, is that Zurich denied that they were a proper party under the direct action statute in its answer to the complaint. It raised as an affirmative defense the contours of the direct action statute as it related to these misrepresentation claims, and the remaining count, the third count, is a count simply for implied warranty. And the only reason Zurich could possibly be viewed as being implicated by that count is because its heading, not even in an averment or paragraph, says it's against all defendants. When it almost became, in filing the motion that the district court ultimately granted here, dismissing Zurich, more of a ministerial act to raise by way of motion to dismiss the failure to the failure of any type of claim against Zurich pursuant to the direct action statute. That was filed by and raised as an affirmative defense in terms of the failure to state a claim. It was addressed. There's no prejudice and certainly no waiver. For all those reasons, we'd ask that this court affirm the district court's decision based on a plain reading of the statute that there's no claim for negligence and therefore a direct action will not lie.
Thank you, Mr. Mullins. Mrs. Darling.
Very quickly, Mr. Chairman. A couple things, just quickly to clarify. There was no question that the district court had dismissed the tort claims when they answered, so there really was no excuse, if it were, for not pleading the defense. Secondly, denial is not an affirmative defense, as the court's aware. And third, failure to state a claim is simply a legal conclusion, which in the cases we've cited in our brief, it does not suffice for an affirmative defense of this nature based on the statute. But that's not about the waiver. I want to address one thing he said was that there was no damage. The court found that there was no damage on the property. That's not what the court found. And if you look at the court referred to the facts being set forth in detail in the district court decision. The district court expressly found there was damage to other property. That's why this was a tough economic loss case. This court affirmed because it felt the purposes of the Wisconsin direct action statute were met, then that's fine. But unquestionably, 66 F sub second, I think at 970, you know, there was damage to other property here. That's our food products. That's why this was, that's why the court below had to insert these new, you know, de minimis arguments and these foreseeability arguments, because it wanted to get where it ended up, and it did so in a well-written opinion, despite the fact that we disagree with the result. Well, we're not saying here that every warranty claim qualifies under that. We're saying under the unique facts of this case, where we would have had, no question, we would have been able to maintain that claim, but for this new evolution of the economic loss doctrine, it falls within the plain intent, meaning, and language of the Wisconsin Direct Action Statute, and therefore we should be able to bring it, and it should be reversed. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Erlach. All your snow gone in Buffalo?
We still have some big piles left, but actually we're getting some when I left yesterday.
I know you had quite a difficulty getting out.
No, you know, I was south of the city, and we didn't even get that big, the Christmas blast we had of the 4 feet.
So, have a safe trip home. All right, thanks to both counsel.